Hello, my name is Dave Emery. In this segment, we're going to be talking about a recent development in which Robert Vesco, the longtime fugitive financier, illegal contributor to the Watergate funds, and apparently a longtime player in the shadowy world of intelligence, narcotics, and weapons trafficking, all of that conducted, or no, I shouldn't say all of that, but much of that conducted apparently under the auspices of and perhaps at the explicit direction of the Nixon White House. Robert Vesco was recently arrested in Cuba, where that is one of many places he has been a fugitive. And one of the people that was detained with him was none other than Donald Nixon Jr., the nephew of Richard Nixon. Information about that was contained in an article from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, June 24th of 1995. This article is an AP story datelined Washington and headlined, Nixon's Nephew Detained in Cuba, Linked to Vesco. It reads in part, Cuba has detained Donald Nixon Jr., a nephew of the late president, and his wife has asked Secretary of State Warren Christopher and Nixon's congressman to help win his release, administration and congressional officials said yesterday. Circumstances surrounding Nixon's detention were unclear. According to congressional sources, Nixon's wife, Helaine, H-E-L-A-I-N-E, said Nixon had been in Cuba attempting to arrange for a pharmaceutical test. Administration sources, however, said Nixon, of Orange County, California, was with Robert Vesco when the fugitive financier was arrested on suspicion of being a, quote, provocateur and agent for foreign special services, unquote, translation intelligence services. Cuba informed the U.S. diplomatic office in Havana in early June of Vesco's arrest, touching off speculation that Cuba might be willing to surrender the financier to U.S. authorities. Skipping down, Vesco, 59, is under indictment for a $200,000 contribution to Richard Nixon's 1972 presidential reelection campaign. He had fled to the Bahamas this year to avoid an investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission. He settled in Cuba in 1982. More about the detention of Robert Vesco, and note that he's being charged with being an agent and provocateur for foreign special services, translation intelligence services. The European magazine's issue of June 16th through 22nd of 1995 has a story by Michael McDonough, M-C capital D-O-N-O-U-G-H, and John Parry, P-A-R-R-Y. It's headlined, We'll Keep Fugitive Vesco, says Cuba. Obviously, that at least from the information presented here, Cuba is not going to extradite Vesco to the United States. There is more discussion here of why perhaps the Cubans are jumping on Robert Vesco right now. Bear in mind that Vesco has been in Cuba since 1982. Bear in mind also that Vesco has been involved in all sorts of shady activities, perhaps the least shady of which was his illegal contribution to Richard Nixon's campaign. That appears to have been a payoff in order to shunt off a Justice Department investigation of some of Robert Vesco's more spectacularly shady activities. This particular article, again from the European, of June 16th through 22nd of 1995, reads in part, reports that the American fugitive Robert Vesco may face a U.S. court after his arrest in Cuba on charges of espionage have been overstated. Cuban officials this week dismissed any suggestions that the 59-year-old former financier will be returned to America to stand trial. Vesco has been on the run for more than 25 years following Swiss and U.S. charges that he stole $225 million from a Swiss investment company, Investors Overseas Services, robbing thousands of European investors of their savings. Skipping down, one senior diplomat in Havana blamed America for the stalemate which has left both countries unable to repatriate suspected criminals. The official claimed that there were many Cuban fugitives suspected of crimes by Havana being harbored by America. Quote, terrorist bombers who have killed hundreds of innocent airline passengers are currently being allowed to strut about under protective sanctuary in the U.S., unquote. Skipping down, the file at Cuba's police headquarters contains at least two fugitives the authorities in Havana would like to capture. One is suspected of bombing a Cuban jet over Barbados in 1973, killing all 170 passengers and crew, while another is wanted for the murder of a Cuban naval officer last year. Speculation that Vesco's arrest signified improving relations between Washington and Havana were quashed when a Cuban Foreign Office statement said that he had been detained on suspicion of being a provocateur and an agent for unspecified Foreign Services. Skipping down still further, of the suggestion that the Nixon White House prevailed on the Swiss authorities who were holding Vesco after his Investors Overseas Services company went belly up and he was being charged with illegalities in connection with same, charges that the Nixon administration had put pressure on the Swiss authorities to release Vesco are discussed as follows, skipping down in the European article of June 16th through 22nd. At the time, however, Vesco was held overnight in Geneva's Saint-Antoine prison. His lawyers demanded that he be freed on bail, and the judge set the amount at the then astronomical sum of 700,000 Swiss francs. Legend has it that Vesco's lawyers had an armored car outside the jail with $5 million in Swiss francs in cash. Soon afterwards, Vesco flew out of Switzerland. Swiss newspapers claimed that John Mitchell, then Attorney General in the Nixon administration, had put pressure on the Swiss government to let Vesco go. Vesco had been given $200,000 to the 1971 re-election campaign of the late president, whom he claimed to know personally, although Nixon denied this. Mitchell and the government also denied putting pressure on Geneva authorities to release Vesco on bail within 24 hours. The exact outcome of this particular arrest of Vesco and the detention of Donald Nixon Jr. and the eventual outcome of the current negotiations to improve Cuban-American relations remains to be seen. I do think, though, that the charges by the Cubans that Vesco was an agent of an agent provocateur for unnamed foreign special services should be evaluated against the background of not only Robert Vesco, but his relationship with the Nixon White House, and also apparently with elements of the underworld and elements of the intelligence community, including elements of the intelligence community associated with the arms trade and also with the establishment of Latin American death squads. We're going to be listening to a segment of a program, an archive show called Radio Free America, program number 25, done in December of 1986. In this particular program, we're going to be listening to a segment detailing the relationship between, or apparent relationships, between Robert Vesco, elements of the U.S. intelligence community, a famous black ops specialist named Mitchell Werbel, best known for designing the Ingram MAC-10 and MAC-11 machine pistols. And what we're going to be talking about in the segment that you're about to hear is an alleged scheme between Robert Vesco, Mitch Werbel, elements of the CIA, and Latin American terrorists to finance the production of Mitch Werbel's Ingram MAC-10 machine pistols and MAC-11 machine pistols in Costa Rica, and to finance Latin American death squad activity. The narcotics traffic figures prominently in here and apparently was to be used to generate the profits to finance this particular operation. Note that many of the relationships in here are speculative. Please note also that there is more information on many of the individuals who will be discussed in this particular segment in others of the archive shows. In particular, I recommend Radio Free America programs 26 and 27. Among the names you'll hear is a former DEA and U.S. intelligence operative named Lucian Conine, who appears to have been using his work for the DEA to finance various types of intelligence activity, including the possibility of death squad activity. You're also going to hear about Kenneth Bernstein, a longtime black ops specialist, convicted drug trafficker, the star witness against Mitch Werbel until he died in the crash of his airplane. Also, you'll hear reference to Jerry Hemming, a longtime special ops veteran, Operation 40, an assassination program that was aimed at eliminating some of the more moderate leaders of the anti-Castro Cuban community in the United States. You'll also hear about Santos Traficante, longtime Florida mafioso, and also for many years an intimate of elements of U.S. intelligence, as well as Alberto Cecilia Falcon, a Cuban-American who was involved in drug trafficking and the arms trade in Latin America, allegedly at the behest of U.S. intelligence. Note, too, that in the European article there is a reference to a Cuban American who was involved in the bombing of the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner. It appears from the context that the reference is to a fellow named Ramon Posada Carriles, one of the many names that cropped up in connection with the Contra support effort during the Iran-Contra scandal. Note also that the terror campaign of which that was a part was conducted by a Cuban-American exile organization, or a Cuban exile organization called CORU, C-O-R-U, headed up by a fellow named Orlando Bosch, who was based in at Costa Rica at the same time that Robert Vesco was based there, and that he was allegedly conspiring with Rebel, possibly Traficante, and elements of U.S. intelligence to manufacture machine pistols and to finance death squad activity in Latin America. Note that this took place under the Nixon administration, much of it anyway, and note that the activities of Robert Vesco and the intelligence milieu that he appears to have been a part of and may still be a part of wind through the many tortuous machinations of the Nixon White House. Note again that Donald Nixon Jr., Nixon's nephew, was apparently detained when he was with Robert Vesco at the time of his arrest. The following segment, approximately 15 minutes in length, is from Radio Free America program number 25, available from archives on audio. It was recorded in December of 1986, and in addition to my own voice, you will also hear the voice of my former co-host, Nip Tuck, who very capably assisted me with the on-air responsibilities. Now, one of the major names that we should come to familiarize ourselves with regard to the interrelationship between the arms and drugs trade, drug trade, and in turn, the CIA's sponsorship of both arms and drugs in under the auspices of official U.S. government operations. Now, one of the names that we should know in connection with this is a guy named Robert Vesco, a fellow who's been connected with a number of scandals in the past, and as it turns out, one of the scandals that he should have been connected with has not been, at least in terms of most of the mainstream press, concerns drug smuggling. That drug smuggling on behalf, apparently, of the United States government or in cahoots with it, and in turn, the interrelationship, as we've seen so often, between drug smuggling and arms smuggling. And one of the names that we're going to look at in connection with Robert Vesco is a fellow named Mitchell Rebel.
Indeed. We're going to read now again from The Great Heroin Coup by Henry Krueger. And this is from a chapter entitled Guns for Drugs, which in fact is our theme tonight, as you can tell. In August 1976, Lucien Conein, C-O-N-E-I-N, Lucien Conein's chum, Mitch Rebel III, whose B.R. Fox company had shared a Washington office with Conein's DEA Special Operations Group, was brought before a Miami federal court on charges of conspiracy to smuggle 50,000 pounds of marijuana a month from Colombia to the United States. He and several co-conspirators had allegedly hatched the plot in the summer of 1975, just when Alberto Cecilia Falcone, and I will put that in parenthetically, this is the series of articles that we read a little earlier in the broadcast, just when Alberto Cecilia Falcone was arrested in Mexico. Multi-ton marijuana loads were to have been flown from Colombia to an isolated ranch in the Florida Everglades near the cow town of Okeechobee. The star prosecution witness was one of Werbel's close associates, the convicted cocaine and marijuana smuggler Kenneth Gordon Bernstein. However, weeks before his scheduled court appearance, he died in the mysterious crash of his P-51 Mustang at an air show. Most of the vital tape recordings and films of meetings between Bernstein, Rebel, and other defendants were no longer producible in court. Rebel's defense was that his role in the plot had been as undercover agent for Conein. Both Conein and Eagle Crow, by the way, was a Nixon staffer, if you don't remember, who was one of the casualties of the Watergate affair. Both Conein and Eagle Crow were to have been witnesses on his behalf, but Crow testified that he didn't know where Bell had worked for the DEA's Special Operations Branch, and Conein wasn't called at all. Another defense witness was the soldier of fortune Jerry Hemming, whose private army of Cuban exiles and Americans, the International Penetration Force, appears, from Hemming's description of its missions, to have played an active role in Operation 40. During the trial, Hemming would stay late into the night in Werbel's hotel room. Werbel was found innocent and released, just like the Thai opium smuggler / CIA agent Puttaporn Kramkwan before him in 1973. He went home to Georgia to pursue his weapons business and law enforcement training camp. According to writer Hank Messick, in 1978 he was involved in far-right politics with the likes of Major General John K. Singlob, who had been relieved of his command in Korea after outspoken criticism of President Carter, and members of the American Security Council, the key U.S. link to the far-right's international umbrella organization, the World Anti-Communist League, dubbed WACL. As reported recently in the New York Times, the beneficiaries of his anti-terrorist training have included members of the far-right anti-Semitic U.S. Labor Party. another significant group.
It's, by the way, run by Lyndon LaRouche,
right,
a name that's familiar to all of us.
Where Bell owns 8 companies, most of them dealing in firearms used by law enforcement and intelligence units. One of the firms studies in the operational negation of insurgents and counter-subversion, otherwise known by its acronym PSYONICS, specializes in the production of M10 and M11 silenced machine pistols. The latter two weapons, designed by Gordon Ingram and Werbel, are about the ultimate weapons for terror and extermination. Their sales agent was Werbel's Military Armament Corporation. Together with the anti-Castro Cuban arms dealers Anselmo Allegro and the mercenary Jerry Hemming, Werbel founded the Parabellum Corporation in 1971 in Miami. Parabellum was licensed to sell arms in Latin America. It was also the firm from which Watergate burglar Frank Sturgis planned to obtain weapons for Cuban exiles who were going to, but eventually did not, disrupt the 1972 Miami presidential conventions.
Continuing with Kruger's account. In 1974, Werbel, according to a motion filed by his own lawyer when Werbel, his son, and his company Defense Services Incorporated were charged with illicit weapon sales, was involved in a, quote, conspiracy among the CIA, Robert Vesco, and various corporations to finance clandestine guerrilla activities in Latin America, unquote. Vesco wanted to purchase Werbel's stock of 2,000 silenced M10 machine pistols. When Werbel failed to secure an export license, he devised a plan to smuggle the weapons to Vesco. The two later negotiated the construction of a factory in Costa Rica, which would be licensed to fabricate the pistols. Intriguingly, in that same period, someone was negotiating with a U.S. firm for rights to fabricate, in Mexico, fully automatic weapons for clandestine guerrilla actions in Latin America. That someone was Mexico's Cuban exile heroin czar Alberto Cecilia Falcón, and among the weapons he was inspecting was the Ingram M10 9mm Parabellum. Although the M10 and M11 could be acquired legally only with the special permission of U.S. officials, large numbers of silenced M10s turned up in the hands of European fascist terrorists in 1976 and 7. When Pierluigi Concutelli, a leader of the Italian terrorist group Ordine Nuovo, was arrested in Rome in February of 1977... Why don't you continue reading here, Nip?
Okay. When Pierluigi Concutelli, a leader of the Italian terrorist group Ordine Nuovo, was arrested in Rome in February of 1977, police found in his apartment the silenced M10, which he had used to murder the Rome magistrate Vittorio Occorsio. Occorsio had been shot down on the streets of Rome in July 1976 after announcing he would expose the close collaboration between fascist terror groups and the mafia. However, it was among Spanish terrorists, in particular, that Werbel's machine pistols appeared in quantity. Most notably, a sizable consignment of M10s, sent to Spain under license from U.S. authorities, had been purchased by the Spanish intelligence agency DGS, which has allegedly coordinated the actions of fascist terrorists. The fugitive IOS billionaire Vesco, of course, Robert Vesco again, employed a large contingent of Cuban exiles in his Costa Rica sanctuary. Moreover, his weapons negotiations coincided with the efforts of the fanatic anti-Castro Cuban leader Orlando Bosch to assemble Cuban exile groups into an army of terror, CORU, C-O-R-U, that would later carry out assassinations and other dirty work for several Latin American regimes. During Bosch's 1974-75 drive, a wave of murder struck Miami's Cuban exile haven. Most victims had been opposed to Bosch. With the obstacles to his plan removed, CORU was established in June. With the obstacles to his plan removed, CORU was established in June 1976. While Vesco and Werbel were hatching their weapons deal, Bosch's base of operation just happened to be Vesco's Kingdom of Costa Rica. And Mafia heroin boss Santo Traficante Jr. was also reportedly there between January 1974 and the summer of 75. Journalist Jim Hogan speculates in his book Spooks that the three might have joined forces in a CIA conspiracy to escalate anti-communist terror in Latin America.
Continuing. In 1973, some of the details began to surface in a series of scandals linking these individuals. That is to say, interrupting Santo Traficante, Mitch Werbel, and Robert Vesco. There are a lot of names in this chapter, so those are the three to keep track of here. Again, in 1973, some of the details began to surface in a series of scandals linking these individuals. DEA undercover agent Frank Peroff charged Vesco with financing extensive heroin smuggling. For his initiative, Peroff was fired summarily and his life was threatened. Before the Senate Investigation Subcommittee could probe deeply, the case was squelched through the intervention of the White House. The Oval Office had already helped Vesco, a friend of the Nixon family, in his run-in with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which had sought his prosecution for the trail of swindle he had left in the world of international finance. Midway through the subcommittee investigation of the heroin charges, the DEA announced the disappearance of its Vesco file. 1 year later, as the subcommittee investigated Werbel's weapons deal with Vesco, it learned that Vesco had once employed government narcotics agents. In 1972, two bugging specialists from the BNDD flew from Los Angeles to New Jersey to sweep Vesco's home and office of surveillance devices. According to the subcommittee, the sweeping tour had been arranged by an admitted friend of Vesco's, who was also involved in supplying the fugitive with 2,000 machine guns and helping him establish a factory for the weapons in Costa Rica. Guess who? And interjecting, of course, the guess who they're talking about is Mitch Werbel. That was not the last heard of Robert Vesco in connection with drugs. In the summer of 1977, police uncovered the smuggling of large quantities of heroin and cocaine to Rhode Island. In one of the involved ships, they discovered a ledger in which it was written, quote, to Vesco, $6 million he picked up with Shrimper Lansky, courier beaten up. Several things point to Vesco involvement in the long-standing partnership of the CIA, the Lansky Traficante Syndicate, and the Cuban exiles in a drugs for guns for terror deal to step up armed suppression and anti-communism in Latin America. Journalist Hogan ventures that the conspirators might have used such go-betweens and couriers as the beautiful Patricia Richardson Martinson. According to her ex-husband, the former Army intelligence agent William Spector, Ms. Martinson had very close relationships with almost everyone of importance in the drug business. Youssef Bedas, the Lebanese founder and managing director of Intrabank, known as one of the major financiers of the heroin traffic. Paul-Louis Weiler, W-E-I-L-L-E-R, a French financier similarly alleged to be behind the narcotics trade. Eduardo Barudi, B-A-R-O-U-D-I, a big-time heroin and gun smuggler suspected of having arranged Bedas's mysterious death in Switzerland. Christian Beausers David. Conrad Bouchard, B-O-U-C-H-A-R-D, a top heroin trafficker heavily involved in Frank Peroff's Vesco heroin allegations. And Marcel Bouquin, B-O-U-C-A-N, the skipper of the Caprice du Temps, which was seized in 1972 with 425 kilos of pure heroin.
Continuing. Yet another likely intermediary among the apparent conspirators is the CIA contract agent slash arms dealer slash art dealer Fernand Legros. In 1971, the CIA helped get Vesco released from San Antoine prison in Geneva, where he had been arrested in the Bernard Kornfeld Investors Overseas Service case. Legros was in that same position, in that same prison, and spoke with Vesco. In January 1973, the two were reunited in Nassau. Legros was seen in the company of Bedas in Geneva and Rio de Janeiro. His closest friend was the convicted heroin trafficker André Labaye, a close associate of Haiti's Duvalier dynasty. In Geneva, Legros also met frequently with Eveline Hirsch, the wife of the imprisoned bankroller André Hirsch, whose South American heroin contact had been Christian David. Just as the U.S. put the screws on the Paraguayan government for the extradition of Auguste Ricord, Legros was in Paraguay to close out a weapons deal with President Stroessner. Later, when Legros was placed in protective confinement in Brazil, newspapers speculated on his involvement in the David mob's narcotics deals. Recent years' investigations into the CIA organized crime connection have resulted in an epidemic of sudden deaths. In the CIA, DEA, Vesco syndicate scheme alone, one can mention Kenny Bernstein, Werbel Associate Colonel Robert F. Bayard, who was shot down in an Atlanta parking lot in July 75, another Werbel Associate and co-defendant in his marijuana case, John Nardi, who was shot in Cleveland, and Vesco's security chief, Bobby Hall, who was shot to death in his Los Angeles home in July 1976. After the Senate Investigation Subcommittee's attempted probe into the Vesco heroin case was sabotaged from the highest quarters, Committee Chairman Henry Jackson asked, quote, did the U.S. government wish to keep Vesco out of this country for some reason? Did he have some special information which he could supply to explain, in part, the national nightmare we have just lived through? One Senate investigator offered an answer. Quote, more than any single person, Vesco has information which, if he talked, would make Watergate look like a picnic.
Now, the point is here that Mitchell Worbell, when he was arrested for arms smuggling, as he was arrested earlier for alleged drug smuggling, said that basically he was involved in a cooperative effort with Robert Vesco and the CIA to finance anti-communist activities in Latin America. As indicated here, Robert Vesco was very much involved with attempting to manufacture Mitch Worbell's automatic weapons in Costa Rica, and Robert Vesco was also heavily involved in the narcotics traffic, according to accounts here. And as indicated, author Jim Hogan in his book Spooks has speculated, and his speculation appears to have considerable merit, that Santos Traficante, Mitch Worbell, and Robert Vesco were involved in using the proceeds from the drug trade to finance the arms trade and in turn to finance anti-communist death squad activity in Latin America. Again, that was from Radio Free America program number 25, recorded in December of 1986. That is available from a tape duplication service named Archives on Audio that I'll have more to tell you about in just a moment. Note that the source material accessed there was a book called The Great Heroin Coup by freelance Danish journalist Henrik Kruger, K-R-U-G-E-R, published in both hardcover and softcover by the South End Press of Boston, copyright 1980. By the way, the book is subtitled Drugs, Intelligence, and International Fascism. All of these archive shows are available from a tape duplication service. More about that right now.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is Archives on Audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
That's now, by the way, a 20-page catalog. Please note that neither myself nor the station gets money out of this arrangement. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.